Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Moms Fighting Autism. You have luckily tuned in to our third annual Autism Conference. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your moderator, Nancy Bernotitis. A little housekeeping before we get started. If you're tuning in via the Internet, you can go to your blue box on the screen and click Slides to view the slideshow. You can synchronize the slides with either your phone or the webcast audio by clicking the button at the bottom of the slideshow. And be sure to mute your computer if you're listening via phone so you don't get an echo. Live callers can, I mean, we're all live, but the callers who are tuning in via their phones, the listeners, can ask a live question by pressing star 2 on their touchpad and just let us know that you're raising your hand to ask a question, and I will gladly pass you through to our presenter. We welcome Kathleen Bolduc. She is a nationally recognized author and speaker in the field of disability ministry, concentrating on disability's impact on the family system and ways in which churches can become more welcoming of families that live with disability. Her books include Autism and Alleluias from Judson Press 2010, A Place Called Acceptance, Ministry with Families of Children with Disabilities, Bridges Resources, Louisville, Kentucky 2001, and his name is Joel, Searching for God in a Son's Disability, Bridge Resources, Louisville, Kentucky, 1999. Her articles have appeared in Guideposts, The Cincinnati Inquirer, Family Ministry, Empowering Through Faith, The Journal of Religion, Disability and Health, Quaker Life, Youth, Dreamweaver, and Fellowship in Prayer. And today she's going to be presenting Autism and Alleluias, Finding God in a Child's Autism. Welcome, Kathy.
Thanks, Nancy. It's really an honor to be here today. This is just a fantastic conference that Moms Fighting Autism is putting together, and I'm really, really honored to be part of it. And thank you, Nancy, for all of your work. I know you and I have exchanged probably at least 20 emails over the past couple days.
Absolutely.
So I can only imagine how many you've done, how many emails you've answered for other presenters. So anyway, and thanks to Ernest Priestley, too, who's done so much work on this whole weekend. Mm-hmm. So I'm really, really glad to be here. I'd like to start out today with a poem that I wrote. I wrote this probably, 10, 12 years ago, and it's called Waiting Rooms. I spend so many hours in waiting rooms, pediatrician, neurologist, behavioral specialist, psychiatrist, school psychologist, play therapist, so many doctors, so much advice, so little understanding. What do they know, despite diplomas on waiting room walls, of living with disability? It's different here. This therapist knows disability. It moved in 20-some years ago with her firstborn child. She teaches my son how to play, leaving me alone with a cup of tea, my thoughts, and magazines, Travel and Leisure, Smithsonian, Family Fun. Sometimes I read them and fume. What happened to my family's fun? Only the beach for us, familiar and undemanding. No museums or theme parks, too stimulating. No long road trips stopping at motels with pools each night, too disruptive. Above the magazine rack, brochures offer a better life, women's mind-body wellness, natural wellness and healing, conflict management. I hear my son's laughter, the sound of knocking on flimsy walls, his current game, sometimes funny, sometimes enough to make me scream, stop. I sip raspberry tea and step into Monet's garden, onto a bridge, a wash, and a dream of green. Countless scenes of beauty just outside the cottage door, waiting for the artist's brush. I wonder, can I carve a garden from the weedy turf of life? Plant colors of my choosing and arrangements pleasing to my eye? Weed out thistles of resentment and fear? Replace them with flowers of joy and contentment? Suspended between past and future, in this waiting room today, I weave a garden plan of beauty while I wait for my son. I'm just wondering if any of you can relate. Are you tired? Are you exhausted from driving from one therapy to the next, from one doctor to the next? Anybody here searching for God in the midst of living with autism? I would imagine so. I'm here today as the mother of three sons. It's my oldest son, Matt, on the right, on your right, my middle son, Justin, on the left, and my youngest son, Joel, in the middle. And Joel has autism. He has moderate intellectual disabilities and an anxiety disorder. He also has severe kyphosis of the spine. And when I wrote this poem, oh gosh, 10 or 12 years ago, we were in the midst of the hardest years with Joel. His adolescence just saw a tremendous escalation of aggression, anxiety, panic attacks, and what looked a lot like bipolar swings, although he was never formally diagnosed bipolar. And when I wrote this poem, I was struggling with depression, anxiety, and exhaustion. So there were a lot of weeds in my garden back then, a lot of weeds. And don't get me wrong, there were a lot of flowers amongst the weeds, probably more flowers than weeds. But, you know, I can say there was a lot of joy along the way. But life with autism is difficult. Life with any kind of disability is difficult. And I would imagine that strewn among the flowers in your garden are some weeds that you might like to remove. As Nancy said earlier, I'm here also as a writer who's chronicled this journey through grief over my son's autism. Because grieve we must if we're going to come to a place called acceptance. And I wrote my first book, his name is Joel. It's just really kind of a chronicle of my grief journey. I started writing it when Joel was 5 or 6. And I had always dreamed of being a writer. And right when I was pregnant with Joel, actually, I had started going to some writing conferences. And what I kept hearing over and over again was, write what you know. Write what you know. Well, by the time Joel was 4 or 5 years old, I knew that I knew what it was to grieve over a child's disability. So I sat down and started writing about my depression, about my anger, about my bargaining with God, all those things that we do as we grieve. And it was actually very, very therapeutic working on that book. And then when Joel was 10, I went back to school to get a master's in religious studies. And this particular program had an emphasis on family systems. So I decided for my thesis project, I would study how disability impacts the family system. And I learned a lot more about that grieving process. Yes, we do. What we're grieving is the death of a dream, that dreamed of child, that when we were carrying them in utero, we had so many dreams and hopes for. So we go through denial, anger, depression, we bargain with God, and then we finally come to this place called acceptance. We don't actually stay in that place. We kind of go back and forth. Every time our child gets into a new phase of life, say when they go to school or when they turn 16 and they should be getting their driver's license, or when they turn 18 and they should be able to vote or go to college, many of our kids don't end up doing those things. So we kind of revisit some of these grieving places. So I wrote A Place Called Acceptance to educate the church on how the entire family is impacted. a little bit about the grief process, how the family, how the marriage is impacted, how siblings are impacted, and then ways in which, kind of practical ways, that the church can actually reach out and minister, not to these families, but alongside these families. How can we draw out the gifts of these children? How can we draw out the gifts of the families? Because these families have learned a lot in raising these children. So that's how I wrote A Place Called Acceptance. And then Autism and Alleluia is a love story. It's a love story of God's unfailing presence through the difficult teen years that we went through with Joel. And I did find out that God was with us each and every step of the way. So I know that we're all in different places in our grief process. Some of us may still be in denial. Some may be stuck in depression. Some of us might be angry. Some of us might be in that place called acceptance today. But I'm here today just to share my journey with you, to share my search for God, and to share how God met me on that journey. And to share the lessons that I've learned through 27 years of living with Joel. That's how old Joel is now. So my prayer is that some part of my journey will resonate with each one of you, so that no matter where you are on your journey, I can provide you with some spiritual direction today and some concrete ways that you can use the spiritual disciplines in your own life to bring healing and wholeness in the midst of living with autism. I have a new appreciation for this quote by the theologian Kierkegaard. He said, "Life is lived forward, but understood backwards." Joel's 27 today, and we've seen a lot of healing in his neurological system. But as Joel's mom, I continue to search for God on a daily basis. And I'm sure you know this. It's really easy to find God in the joy-filled moments of our lives. It's easy to praise God for the healing we've seen in Joel's neurological system. But I'm here to tell you today that the place that I have really found God has been in the midst of the struggle and the pain. I found him on that bridge between the past and the future. You know, just think about that bridge in Monet's painting. That bridge between the past and the future, which is the present, no matter what the present moment holds. God's been present with us all along. And that belief is really strengthened in the discipline of looking back, of remembering and meditating on God's faithfulness along the journey. So I've been on the search for God in the midst of autism for 27 years now. And meditating on and writing about this journey has really grown into my life's work. And it's my hope today to share just a little bit of the wisdom I've gleaned in that journey with you. But I really look at God as the master gardener who, through Joel, has taught me how to weed out those thistles of resentment and fear and replace them with flowers of joy and contentment. So just kind of a quick overview of what we're going to look at today. These are some of the lessons from the Master Gardener that I've learned through Joel. We'll talk about authenticity and love for self, faith and hope, surrender, trust, and persistence in prayer. And I'm going to end each one of these lessons with what I'm calling Miracle Grow for the garden. I think that each of us needs to be watered and fed in this garden that includes autism. You know, it's hard work being the mom or a dad of a child with autism. It requires just an amazing amount of energy and strength, physical, mental, and emotional. We just can't expect to give and give and give and give without being refreshed and renewed ourselves. So I'm going to ask you to jot a few things down as you reflect on ways that you can water the garden of your soul. So if you have a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper handy, that would be great. I'm going to do something kind of radical today. So often our child with autism becomes the sun around which the rest of our life revolves. Like the rest of our family is kind of this planetary system that revolves around this child with autism. And our lives can become kind of distorted as our marriages can be neglected and our other children have to become increasingly self-confident. So what I'm going to ask you to do today is to change the focus. Change the focus from your child's autism to what God is calling you to learn from this very special child. Excuse me. As a friend of mine put it, we're going to change the focus from the problem to the problem solver. The problem not being our child, and that's not what I'm saying, but the problem being autism. So taking the focus from the problem to the problem solver, which is God. So that's the change of focus that we want to do today. So, gardening lesson number one, authenticity and love. I have a story, and his name is Joel, about being at a party. I don't know how old Joel was at the time, maybe 6 or 7 or 8, something like that. And this person came up to me at a party and said, "So, how's Joel doing?" And I just stood there and looked at this person, totally speechless for a moment, because I was trying to figure out how much this person really wanted to know. And what I finally said was, "You know, Joel's Joel. What you see is what you get." And that is so absolutely true of Joel. Unlike the majority of us, he doesn't get up in the morning and put on a mask to hide his flaws and imperfections. He just barrels on out of that bedroom, or more likely these days as he's become more of an adult, he sometimes just stumbles bleary-eyed to the bathroom. Not waking up until somebody helps him wash his face with cold water. But he gets out of bed totally and unreservedly himself. And I don't know about you, but I used to hide behind a lot of masks myself. I really liked to appear together. Even when I was falling apart, I wanted the world to view me as being together. So I wanted to be the good mother, a good wife, a good daughter. I used to work really, really hard at being good at whatever I did. And as for Joel, for so many years in the beginning, I could only see the behaviors and how hard it was for him to learn the easiest of tasks, his distractibility, and really, when he was younger, I thought that he was broken and needed to be fixed. This was in the very beginning of my grief process. Well, one day I had a vision in prayer, and it was a very vivid vision. And I saw Jesus in the middle of Joel's classroom. And Joel was in what at that time was termed a multi-handicapped classroom. And so all of the children in the classroom had some type of disability. And I saw Jesus sitting on the floor in the middle of the classroom. All the kids were gathered around him, and Joel was actually sitting right at his feet. And he picked up Jesus' hand in his own, and he saw the nail hole in Jesus' hand, and he said, "Oh, hurt, hurt. Band-aid, Band-aid." And Jesus motioned the teacher to bring some Band-Aids over, so she did. And he gave a Band-Aid to Joel, and Joel was getting very agitated trying to open up that Band-Aid. He just couldn't do it. So Jesus very carefully helped him open it, and Joel placed that Band-Aid on Jesus' hand. And I want to read you just a couple of paragraphs from the chapter that I wrote about that. Such a simple gesture, so childlike, this concern for someone's hurt. It pierced my heart, and with the piercing came new understanding. Despite his disabilities, maybe even because of them, Joel is a clear channel of God's love, a conduit unblocked by worldly fears, preoccupations, idols, and cares. I wondered, what would my reaction be if confronted with the living Christ? Would I stammer and stutter in self-consciousness, search for words and find none worthy of his hearing, slink to the back of the crowd afraid of embarrassing myself? Probably. Through this vision, God opened a window in my clouded and imperfect vision of the world. My son, whom I had viewed as broken, greeted the living Christ with a kiss to the hand that was nailed to the cross 2,000 years ago. A child with autism, ministering to the Lord. What is brokenness? What is wholeness? Surely, in the eyes of his Lord, my son is perfectly whole. So Joel really turned my whole concept of what it means to be whole upside down. And I began to look at my own brokenness. I began to accept my own brokenness. And this is another thing I learned in studying disability in the family system, is that having a child with a disability brings up a lot of our own unresolved stuff, stuff that we have just kept stuffed down there for years. And really, only by scooping out the muck and spreading it around like fertilizer can we really grow. And so I can say Joel has been the catalyst for so much growth in my own spirit. He forced me to face my own fears. And I discovered there was a lot of muck. There was a lot of muck inside of me. And that muck really has made wonderful fertilizer in my life. All those years of trying to be the good daughter, the good wife, the good mother, the good Christian, because I didn't feel good about myself. I was immersing myself in these roles to make myself lovable in other people's eyes. So with this realization that was brought about through Joel, I really began to spend more and more time in prayer. And, oh, I'm sorry, I just got us off the wrong slide. There we go. What I discovered in that time of prayer is that God loves me just as I am. I don't have to try so hard. And God loves Joel just the way he is. I began to see Joel's many gifts, his gift of unconditional love, the way he loves to pray for people, the way he's just so beautifully and authentically himself. And I realized I don't have to try so hard to be that perfect wife, daughter, or perfect mother of a kid with autism. And a huge, huge burden lifted with that realization. And these are my little footprints and my birth certificate on the slide here. Just an amazing, amazing gift that was brought to me through Joel. So remember I said I wanted to end each one of these lessons with some concrete ways to feed and water ourselves in the garden that we're planted in. So some Miracle-Gro for the garden. read the scriptures on a daily basis. And not everybody that here is here today may be a Christian. You may be of another religious persuasion. You know, but each religion has its own scriptures. Spend time in the scriptures on a daily basis to just to soak up the many, many ways that God tells you that he loves you. Schedule time for yourself by yourself. This goes for husbands as well as wives. Let your spouse spend some extra time with your child or hire a babysitter. Take care of yourself. You know, go out for lunch, go golfing or fishing, get a pedicure, go to the movie, even to the library for half an hour. And maybe you feel you can only take 15 minutes a day for yourself. But do it. Take care of yourself. Schedule getaway time for you and your husband or your wife if you're married. You know, schedule a weekly date. Try and do an overnight once in a while. My husband and I really tried very hard to get away for an overnight a couple times a year. It was hard, believe me. It was hard finding child care. But we felt it was really worth it for our marriage. Find what feeds your spirit and do it. I love this quote by Howard Thurman. He said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it, because what the world needs is people who have come alive." So what makes you come alive? You know, that's what you want to find and spend some time doing. For me, it's spending every Wednesday morning with my contemplative prayer group and spending quarterly retreats at a monastery where I have time to write. For my husband, it's fly fishing and hiking. So I'd like you to take just a minute and just jot down what feeds your spirit. You know, just one thing. What comes to your mind right away? What makes you feel alive? And if you can think of more than one, you know, write them down. And then also surround yourself with people who make you feel good. I heard a speaker one time, she referred to these as balcony people. She said, we all have balcony people in our lives and we have basement people in our lives. Hang out with the balcony people. And these are the people who make you feel good about yourself, who love and accept you for who you are. And you can think about the team concept, too. Who can you count on to be there for you? We really need to have a team around us when we're parenting kids with autism. So jot down one or two people who really make you feel good. Balcony people in your lives. And I have found in my own life I've had to stay away from some of the basement people, the people who pull me down, because it's really important for me and for my family, especially when Joel was living at home and we were in the midst of really living day to day with autism. It was very important for me to be feeling good about myself. So if you have any basement people in your life, you might want to think about not spending quite as much time with them. And for my husband and I, we found that we both belong to a couple of small groups through our church. These are the people that we can count on to be there for us, the people we can go to for prayer. So finding those people in our lives, surrounding ourselves with them is very, very important. So Joel is just simply, unapologetically, and wonderfully himself, and God has used him to teach me to love and accept not only him, but myself, just as I am, and to take care of myself. Gardening lesson number 2, faith and hope. And in the midst of my grieving, which was pretty intense the first few years of Joel's life, I began to search for God everywhere, and one place I found him without fail was in the simple rhythms of nature. Just the simple rhythm of day and night. No matter how long the day was, no matter how many tantrums, no matter how many doctor appointments, therapy appointments, nighttime would come, I could put the kids to bed, Joel would sleep, except during his manic phases, which I'll talk a little bit about in a little while. But I knew that everybody could go to bed and a good book waited for me next to my bed and that sleep would refresh me. And when Joel couldn't sleep, no matter how long the night, no matter if we were up the whole night, which we sometimes were, I knew that morning would come and I could put him on the bus and a new day, a new beginning, a new start was there. Just very simple, very basic, but just that simple rhythm began to feed me. And then the rhythm of the seasons. I really found God in the rhythm of the seasons. And we just recently moved to a farm, and I am really just eating up watching the seasons unfold around me here out in the country. It's magical. And fall is my favorite season, I think. Just that awesome spectacle of green leaves magically turning crimson and golden, magenta, just overnight. And the smell of burning leaves and the smell of new school supplies. Reclaiming my house as a sanctuary when the boys went back to school. I love and respect all of you homeschoolers, but I'll tell you what, in September I put the kids on the bus to school. My house was my sanctuary again. The delight of Indian summer after cold snap, just the sound of migrating geese overhead. And then the hush of winter, those shortened days, earlier bedtimes, making fires in the fireplace, making beef stew and smelling that in the afternoon. Being able to read all wrapped up in an afghan. You know, I used to not like winter, but, you know, winter is cold and barren, but there is something of God to be found there. You know, we plant those bulbs in the fall, and they're just waiting for the warm sunshine of spring to bloom. So we have faith, even though the ground is bare and barren in the winter, that even though there is no sign of new life, that new life will burst forth. And then, of course, spring, which we're in the midst of right now, and here in Ohio, it's been glorious, absolutely glorious. It's miraculous. It's really nothing short of miraculous to walk out your door and to see what was gray and brown and bare all of a sudden just brimming with color and new life. And then summer. Everybody loves summer. You're walking barefoot in the grass and having ice creams at the Creamy Whip with our kids, going to the pool. So just those simple rhythms of nature began to really feed me. And I think what we find in these simple rhythms are comfort in the midst of an anxiety that can sometimes verge on panic. We can find confidence in the midst of our uncertainty about the future. I mean, after all of these winters, watching all of these winters turn into spring, I have hope in the hardest times with autism that spring is going to come. It'll be a different kind of spring, but I have hope that we'll get through the hard places. There's order in the midst of chaos. It's okay that winter comes. It's okay that life is barren sometimes. That God is working, even in what looks to be a barren landscape. There's a sense of peace and tranquility. And it's a way to pay attention to God's faithfulness and to express gratitude. And I want to talk a little bit more about gratitude in a few minutes, but I think that cultivating gratitude is just a non-negotiable for a happy life. It's something that we just need to learn how to do it. I grew up in a family where the glass was half empty all the time. So I've been spending my adulthood trying to see that glass as half full. It makes a big difference. So how can we be refreshed by paying attention to the simple rhythms of our lives? It's a miracle grow for the garden. I really encourage people that I work with, parents that I work with, to keep a journal. Write down God's sightings. This doesn't have to be a fancy journal. You can just be a spiral-bound notebook or a legal pad. And then at the end of your day, or maybe at the beginning if you're a morning person, unlike me, just jot down those places where you meet God in the rhythm of your daily life. Write down scriptures that uphold you during hard times, or quotes that you come across that inspire you and remind you of what you believe in but tend to forget when you're really, really stressed out and tired. And then put those in places that you will see them. Put them on little post-its and put them on the bathroom mirror or over your kitchen sink, someplace where you'll see that quote and read it throughout your day. Express gratitude. Again, really working on this gratitude thing. Express it out loud. You might just thank God out loud for things as you're walking through your day or in your journal. You might even want to keep a gratitude journal. Just appreciation for the fact that the world goes on and all of its splendor, even at times when it feels like our personal world is falling apart. Get outside and go for a walk. I think that this is so important, just getting out into nature. Feel the wind on your face. Look up. Look at the sky. We miss so much. We're so busy. We're so focused on our next task that we very seldom look up. Now look at the clouds. Look at the stars. Get in your car and chase a rainbow. Joel and I used to do this all the time. When we'd see a rainbow, we'd get in the car and we'd see if we could get any closer to it. It was really fun, and since he's moved away, I haven't done that. I need to just go out and chase a rainbow on my own. Walk in the woods and feel the crunch of leaves and sticks under your feet, and walk barefoot as often as you can. I think just immersing ourselves in nature, it's the place where just the great cycle of life is played out on a daily basis, and it makes our personal lives, we can put them more into perspective, I think. So I'd like you to just jot down one concrete, doable activity you can do once a day to lift your spirits and feed your soul. You know, maybe it's just walking outside every night and looking at the stars. Working in the garden for a few minutes. Just one very easy, concrete thing you can do once a day to lift your spirits and feed your soul. We can find faith and hope in God in the midst of in something as simple as not.
Hey, Kathy, it's doing that beeping thing.
Oh, okay. All righty. Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
Great. So we can find God in the midst of these simple things, just a simple cycle of life. So what else has Joel taught me? The next lesson is surrender. I don't know if you've ever been to the beach and sat on the beach with your kids, kind of right on the place where the waves come up onto the sand, and you dig to make a sandcastle. You kind of dig and dig and dig, and water burbles up, filling the hole that you've been digging out. The water just kind of comes and burbles up from below. It reminds me of this quote. It says, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked." deeper the sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. I love that. I love that quote. The deeper the sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. As parents of kids with autism, we're going to face a lot of hard times. We're going to grieve for these children that we love so much, and we watch them struggle, and we grieve for that. And in the words of the poet Wendell Berry, he says, it gets darker and darker, and then Jesus is born. And Anne Lamott, who's one of my favorite authors, she wrote a book called Traveling Mercies, tells an old Hasidic story of a rabbi who taught his congregation to put scripture on their hearts by studying the Torah. And somebody asked him, well, why should we put the scripture on our hearts instead of in them? And the rabbi answered, only God can put the scripture inside, but reading the sacred text can put it on your heart. And then when your hearts break, the holy words will fall inside. You see, I think that pain is where we meet God face to face. I think that that's where a deeper relationship with God begins to be forged in the midst of pain. And that's when God's power pours forth, when we admit that we can't do it all on our own, when we realize that we're not ultimately in control of our child's autism. And don't get me wrong, we do everything in our power we can. We research, we network, we spend the money to do the therapies, but we do everything we can. But ultimately, just as in everything else in life, we are not in control. And I think that when we surrender, that water can start to burble on up through that place of emptiness. And I want to just tell you a story about surrender in my own life. I was very, very anxious about the coming school year. It was in August, and I was meditating in my study. One day everybody was at school, and I was meditating, trying to meditate. Well, I couldn't get quiet because I just kept thinking about the school year, and the last school year had been pretty much of a nightmare. And I kept having these visions of 10 or 12 people gathered around the conference table, and Joel's days charted out in living color on these graphs. I mean, he was having behavioral incidents, you know, 100 times a day. It had been a horrendous year. So here I am trying to get quiet, and I just keep thinking, what's this year going to be like? I was so worried about the year. And I finally just said, okay, that's it. I can't do this anymore, God. That's it. I give him to you. I am through. I cannot do this anymore. He is yours. Why, no sooner did those thoughts go through my mind than I was filled with an amazing peace. And it was like this golden light just showered over me from my head all the way down through my body, through my feet. And I sat there in the midst of unbelievable peace. It was just beautiful. Well, then all of a sudden I heard the thud of the mailbox, which was right outside my study. And that kind of brought me out of this beautiful place I'd been. And I went outside to get the mail. And there was an envelope from Sister Mary Grace, who was a Dominican nun I had met through my first book. And she had written to me, she had gotten a hold of me somehow after reading the book, and said, oh, I have to paint a picture of that story of Joel putting the Band-Aid on Jesus' hand. And I knew that that's what was in this envelope. And sure enough, I opened it up, and here was this picture of Jesus in the middle of Joel's classroom, just as I had seen it in that vision and prayer years before. What an amazing confirmation that the Lord would be with Joel in the coming school year, that he was with him all along, even when I couldn't see him. And it's in that act of surrendering, handing Joel over to God's safekeeping over and over again, because I tend to keep taking it back again, so I keep handing him back over, that God's power is released in my life and that I end up being more and more the person that God created me to be, which is makes me a better mother to Joel, a better wife to my husband, a better friend, just a better person all along. And so for so long I had struggled to fit prayer and meditation into my routine. It was no longer a struggle. I made the time because the waters that welled up in the silence filled all of my empty places to overflowing, and I found I just couldn't do without it. So that was really just amazing. I have this, the original of this painting. We have a prayer room on the grounds of our new place in the country. We're developing a retreat center here. We have a prayer room, and the original of this painting is probably 5 feet long and 3 feet tall. So it's on the wall of our prayer room there. It's just a really awesome painting. So to move on to some ways to refresh ourselves in the garden, find ways to externalize your grief. Let it see the light of day. Write it down in your journal. Speak it out loud to a friend over lunch. Speak it to a counselor or a pastor. I find that praying out loud really helps when I'm by myself, praying out loud, just getting it out of my head, surrendering out loud over and over really helps me. Simply sit in God's presence and soak up his love. Yell at God if you need to. He can take it. And if you feel guilty about that, read the Psalms. You will see that the psalmist was continually letting God know how upset he was with God. He also thanked God and praised God, but it's okay if you're angry with God. It's part of the journey. And then find a life verse. I think that mine is, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And I go back to that again and again when I'm having struggles with my own anxieties over Joel. So just jot down one way that you are willing to externalize your grief, or one way that you already do. So allowing ourselves to grieve broken dreams is a part of the work that we do as parents of kids with autism. And then surrendering that grief to God, giving up control so that his power might rush in to supplement our weakness. Gardening lesson number 4, trust. I like this quote. Some people think it's a little cheesy, but I kind of like it. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a gift. That's why we call it the present. I just want to talk just a little bit about living in the present moment. I'll tell you another little story about Joel. It was another August, right before the school year was going to start, and Joel was standing at our kitchen window. Looking out the window, I was standing at the kitchen table folding laundry, and he was just mesmerized by something out the window, and I wasn't paying much attention. And all of a sudden, he said, "The trees are falling. The trees are falling." And I looked up and looked out, and well, the leaves were falling off of the walnut tree, even though it was only August. And they were just gently spiraling to the ground. It was really quite beautiful. And I said, "Yeah, Joel, the trees are falling." Didn't even correct his grammar. I had too much on my mind to stand there and look at leaves falling out of the tree. I was actually thinking about the school year again and getting into that place of anxiety and panic about it. Well, he just stood there for the longest time, and then all of a sudden he disappeared down the basement steps. And I didn't hear him for a couple. I could just hear him rustling in the cupboard at the bottom of the steps, and I thought, what is he doing? So I stood at the top of the steps. I said, Joel, what are you doing down there? And he yells back up, looking for angels. And it's very unusual for him to even answer a question, so I was kind of shocked that he answered me. But looking for angels, the Christmas stuff I keep in the cupboard right at the bottom of those basement steps. I said, looking for angels? And he said, yeah, looking for angels. It's time for Christmas. And I said, no, Joel, it's not time for Christmas. It's August. We're going to start school pretty soon. And so first comes the fall, and then comes winter and Christmas time. Well, he was down there. He was looking for angels. I'm going to read you just a couple of paragraphs from a chapter in Autism and Alleluias. Joel's logic defies me until a sermon I heard years ago by Tony Campolo pops into my head. Time as we know it, Campolo reminded me, does not exist for God. Past, present, and future exist at the same time in God's mind. There is no past, no present, no future. Simply the sacred now. In God's time, as the walnut drops her leaves on this hot and humid August afternoon, it is simultaneously that very first Christmas. Even as angels announce that holy event, Joel announces to me, on this Wednesday afternoon at the tail end of summer in the year 2000, that something sacred is happening right now, this very moment. Through the walnut tree, through Joel, through angels stored in the basement, I am being called to live now, today, not in the unknown and uncontrollable future, not in the past with its guilt and regrets, but in the present holy moment. I walk back to the kitchen window and allow myself to be mesmerized by the beautiful sight in front of me, to truly experience walnut leaves fluttering to the ground. The background noise of all my anxieties, as well as the sound of Joel wrestling through the basement cupboard, is drowned out by the sigh of a late summer breeze and echoes of angel song. So Joel teaches me to live in the here and now. It's a creative place. It's a place of deep, deep love. It's a place of thankfulness and gratitude just for the simple pleasures of life. You know, a latte on a cold morning, lunch with a friend, my husband grabbing my hand when we go for a walk, you know, the dog greeting me at the door with her tail wagging so hard she almost falls over. It's a place of understanding that Joel is a miracle, just as he is. And that doesn't mean I stop working at finding healing for Joel. That doesn't mean I stop praying for healing. What it means is that in this moment of time, right now, I love and accept Joel just as he is, with all of his quirks and shortcomings, with all of his autistic tendencies. So what are some ways that we can refresh and renew ourselves to gain this kind of eyesight? Begin to practice mindfulness. When washing the dishes, let yourself totally get into washing the dishes. When taking a walk, open up all five senses and soak it in. When nursing your baby, close your eyes and immerse yourself in the experience. Where do you find God? Do you find him in nature, in scripture, in study groups, in worship, in times of quiet prayer? Wherever it is that you find God most often, go there as often as you can. For me, it's in meditation, in that act of quieting my busy mind so I can simply just sit in God's presence and sometimes hear what he's saying to me. I also love to find books by authors that revel in the sacred that surrounds us all the time. Macrina Wiedeker is one of my favorite authors. And I recently read a book called 1,000 Gifts. I can't remember the author's name, but oh my gosh, that is just a beautiful book on cultivating gratitude. I highly recommend it to you. So jot down where God meets you most often. You know, whether it's outside, is it in your living room early in the morning? Jot down where it is and just make a quick promise to yourself that you will go to this place on a regular basis to meet with God.
You're beeping.
You know, God has taught me so much through Joel. Joel really has been the biggest agent of transformation in my life. I can say that without a doubt. And our last lesson is persistence in prayer. There's a story in the book of Luke about a widow who kept going to a judge. And she kept going to him and saying, you know, that her rights were being violated and she wanted something specific from this judge. So she kept going back and back and back to this guy. And he wasn't going to give her what she wanted, but he finally gave up because he was so tired of her coming to him. So Jesus says, well, do you hear what that judge, as corrupt as he is saying? So what makes you think God won't step in and work justice for his chosen people who continue to cry out for help? Won't he stick up for them? I assure you he will. He will not drag his feet. So I think of myself quite often as that persistent widow. Wally and I have been praying for Joel since he was a little itty-bitty guy. We lay hands on him and pray for him. We've asked our small groups to pray for him. We've asked our small groups to pray for us. We've written prayer requests almost weekly and put them in the offering plate at church. We take Joel up for prayer. Our church has a healing service during communion once a month. Take Joel up for prayer then quite often. We send out email requests for prayer. We are persistent in prayer because we believe that God heals. But God doesn't always heal the way we want him to heal. Are you still there? So God heals. He answers our prayers. I believe his healing power still flows through our hands today. But it's a mystery. He doesn't always heal the way I ask. So it's taken many years, but we're seeing some physical healing in Joel. We've seen healing in our marriage. I've had healing in my own spirit. And God has used Joel to spread words of encouragement to people across the country and even in countries across the sea. So persistence in prayer. We have been praying since Joel was young for a place for him to live as an adult and just praying that the right thing would come up. And we always felt that when Joel was an adult, that he, like his brothers, should be able to go live outside of the home and have his own life and to be all that he could possibly be as a person. And that prayer was answered a couple years ago with Safe Haven Farms. It's a farm for adults with autism outside of Middletown, Ohio. And it's only about a half an hour from where we live. And Joel has a beautiful house there with three other guys live in his house with him. And there's a beautiful Dayhead Center, and then there's a barn. We're getting horses for therapeutic horseback riding. Within a few months, that program is going to start. They garden. They grow some of their own vegetables. Lots of time is spent outdoors. It's just been amazing, amazing answer to prayer. So here's our last spot of miracle grow. Lay hands on your child and pray for him or her on a daily basis. Ask your small group to pray for your child and for you. Write prayer requests and put them in the offering plate at church. Take your child to healing services on an occasional basis. Send out email requests for prayer. God is the God of wholeness. I do not believe that God creates illness or disability. These are the result of a fallen world. And as you can see from my talk, I'm a Christian. Some of you may be Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist. Whatever your faith, I believe that God calls us to continually work toward healing and wholeness for our children. God may answer our prayers differently than we would wish. Healing comes in many guises. It might be spiritual, it might be physical, it might be emotional. And I'm not talking about praying to God to change our children into somebody that they're not. I'm not talking about not accepting them just as they are. I'm talking about praying for God to heal our child's anxiety, to heal their ability to communicate, to heal them of fear, to heal low self-esteem, to bring them into the kind of wholeness that God has in store for them. And pray continually for God to heal you, to heal your attitudes, your fears, your places of brokenness, that the eyes of your heart might be opened to see the many gifts your child brings to your life every day. So to come full circle, through Joel, God has taught me about authenticity and love, faith and hope, surrender, trust, and persistence. And as I said at the beginning, I realize each one of us is planted in a different garden. We're dealing with different weeds and different flowers. We're in different places in this grief process. Some of us might not have endured enough winters and greeted enough springs with joy and relief to believe that God is there in the garden in the middle of winter. But I believe the Master Gardener is waiting to help us replace those thistles and weeds, no matter what they are, with flowers of joy and contentment. And I'm going to end with part of the poem that I began with. I've changed the wording just a little bit, so you might see if you can hear the shift. I wonder, can I carve a garden from the weedy turf of life, plant colors of my choosing and arrangements pleasing to my eye, weed out thistles of resentment and fear, replace them with flowers of joy and contentment, suspended between past and future. In this waiting room today, I weave a garden plan of beauty while I wait for my son.
In the meantime,
hi, Nancy.
Oh, hello.
I couldn't get through.
Are you back in?
Yeah. When did you lose me?
I think we both got knocked off, actually, at about the same time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So we're back now. It's the slide before this one where I got knocked out.
Okay.
So I don't know how far you got before you realized you were disconnected.
Yeah, I didn't realize till the very end. So, okay.
So this is, miracle growth for the garden. You were talking about having your prayer group pray for Joel, and you take him up for special communion time.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I was just some Miracle-Gro for the garden. I advise people that I work with to take time to lay hands on your child daily for prayer. Ask your small group to pray for them. You might write prayer requests at your church. Take your child to healing services. And that type of thing. Get back to my notes here.
Oh, Facebook. That's where I always ask for prayer.
Yes, Facebook is a great place. Yeah, that's a
great
place.
Where all my friends are anyway, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, so just God is a God of wholeness. You know, he does not, I don't believe God creates illness or disability. These are just part of living in a fallen world. And I'm a Christian. Some of you may be Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist. Whatever your faith, I believe God calls us to continually work toward healing and wholeness for our children. And God might answer our prayers differently than we would wish. Healing comes in many guises, spiritual, physical, emotional. And I'm not talking about praying to God to change our children into somebody they're not. I'm not talking about not accepting them just as they are. I'm talking about praying to God to heal our child's anxiety, you know, to heal their ability to communicate, to heal them of fear, to heal if they have low self-esteem, just to bring them into the kind of wholeness that God has in store for them. And then I would really urge you to pray for God to heal you, to heal your attitudes, your fears, your places of brokenness, that the eyes of your heart might be opened to see the many, many gifts that your child brings to your life every day. So just kind of come in full circle, the lessons that God has taught me through Joel, authenticity and love, faith and hope, surrender and trust. Oh, and persistence in prayer. I thought I had one more slide on here, but oh, there it is. I'm going to end by reading the very end of the poem that I read in the beginning, and I've changed the wording just a little bit. I don't know if you'll be able to notice that or not. I carve a garden from the weedy turf of life. Plant colors of my choosing in arrangements pleasing to my eye. Weed out thistles of resentment and fear. Replace them with flowers of joy and contentment. Suspended between past and future, in this waiting room today, I weave a garden plan of beauty while I wait for my son. So thank you so much for being with us today, and we have some time to answer some questions, so
yeah. Anyone that's using their telephone, you can ask a question by pressing star 2. And anyone that wants to can submit a question through the internet. We had Barb from Brighton, Michigan ask, or she didn't ask, but she made a comment. She said, just a comment. Thank you for posting on Facebook. This conference was happening. My spirit is always renewed by your sharing about Joel, whom I love and pray for and learn from, too.
Oh,
thanks,
Barb.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had a question.
Uh-huh.
Have you always been very spiritual, or did this, you know, come about more with the disability?
I think that I was pretty much of a prodigal when I was younger. I had left the church and really didn't have much to do with God at all. Right, I think it was maybe 5 years before Joel was born, my father died. And God gave me a dream after my dad died. I was really in just a terrible place of grief. I was very close to my dad. And I was 7 months pregnant with my second son at the time that he died. And I was just afraid to really, I was afraid to grieve. I was afraid I'd go into premature labor. And so I was having a really rough time. And God gave me a dream that made it so clear to me that my dad was in a good place and that God loved me. And he gave me, there was a rainbow in the dream. And just a few days after the dream, I was with, and in the dream, actually, I was with my two brothers standing on either side of me with this rainbow in the sky. And I knew at that moment in the dream that my dad was okay. Well, I forgot the dream when I woke up. And a couple days later, I'm at my mom's house, and there's a thunderstorm, and I went outside to watch the storm on the front porch. And all of a sudden, my two brothers came out and were standing on either side of me, just like in the dream. And this beautiful rainbow appeared right in front of us. And the dream came back, and I was like, whoa, that's amazing. And then my mom called us in the house, and she had some slides, family slides on. And there was a picture of my dad and I on the beach with a rainbow above our heads. And at that point, I was like, wow, I really believe there is a God, and I believe that he loves me enough to try and help my grief, you know, with this. So at that point, I started going back to church and learned how to meditate, Christian meditation, started practicing that. And I think that practice of meditation was kind of a lifesaver when Joel came into my life, because I had this place I could go to where I could actually experience God's love and presence and experience some relaxation at the same time. Just a place, it was a huge, huge stress reliever. And then just kept bringing me, I think, closer and closer to that spiritual connection with God. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but yeah.
I didn't come back to the church until Sam was probably, he had just been diagnosed, he was four, mm-hmm. and a friend was going through a divorce, and I went to church to support her, and I ended up staying, and she stopped going, because as soon as I walked in there, just everything came pouring out, and I realized that's where I needed to be.
Yeah.
So, I know.
I think that's something that's missing in a lot of the literature on autism is how important the faith journey is for parents. I think it can be such a huge life raft, really. It's like a life raft. It really lifts us up, and it's life-giving. So
I don't know how faithless parents can cope with the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
I really wonder that myself. Which one of your books would you recommend for someone who just was diagnosed, somebody who's coping with the first stages of grief?
His name is Joel. Is really more about the grieving process. It goes from birth to age 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that book deals much more with the grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Autism and Alleluias goes through the teen years, and that is more looking at finding the lessons, you know, that Joel
mm-hmm.
had to bring to us. So, yeah.
Depends on where you are.
Yeah, it depends on where you are in your journey. Yeah.
Has your church always been very welcoming to Joel?
No, we ended up leaving a church when he was about five. The Christian education director told us not to bring him back to Sunday school because he was pulling hair, and she said that they couldn't work with him, not to bring him back.
Wow.
And rather than trying to find a way to do it. So, and it was a church that we loved, and we loved the people there, but we were very hurt, and so we ended up going to another church. And at that point, we discovered we really needed to find a buddy for Joel, you know, to go to church with him or go to Sunday school with him.
Mm-hmm.
He needed help negotiating the classroom. He really did have quite a few behaviors that were difficult to deal with. So we found the buddy system worked pretty well. And then when he was, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11, his buddy went to college, and we had a hard time finding another buddy. So he started coming to church with us. And the people were very accepting of him in worship, even though he would get up quite often. And I do write about that in both of my books, some of those church experiences. And, you know, kids with autism, they talk when they want to talk and make noises when they want to make noises and get up and walk around when they want to get up and walk around. I mean, it's not like you're, you know, able to keep some of that stuff from happening. And sometimes the embarrassment was my own. I wasn't getting it actually from nothing anybody was saying. It was my own kind of embarrassment. But even then, God really taught me that Joel was bringing a gift to everybody in that worship space. That became very, very clear to me. So then that embarrassment, you know, went away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're in a brand new church now because we just moved up to Oxford, Ohio, which is outside of Cincinnati. We're in a little teeny church, and Christmas Eve, we have a very relaxed service because this is a university town, and hardly anybody is in church on Christmas because everybody's gone home. And the pastor said, so does anybody want to get up and lead us in some Christmas carols? And somebody yelled out, Joel's a really good singer. And Joel just stood up and walked right to the front and put his hand out for the microphone. The pastor gave him the microphone. And my husband went up and stood with him, and he led the church in singing two songs. And I'll tell you what, my heart, I was just sitting in the back crying because I was so happy. First time I really felt like his gifts were really acknowledged and called on, you know.
You're making me cry.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah, it makes me cry thinking about it.
Not supposed to make me cry. It's one of the rules. Yeah. Sam's 14, and we did start taking him to church with us, too, but, of course, you stay 10 minutes and you leave, and the next time you stay 12 minutes and you leave until he can finally stay through the whole thing. But he knows the routine. So, like, the band plays, the minister talks, the band plays, and then we eat.
Yeah, right.
That's the routine. So as soon as the band comes right back up on stage, he gets so excited. He turns to everybody, and he's like, eat! You know, it's time. It's time. So,
you know what Joel used to do when if the pastor's sermon went on too long? He'd start saying, time to eat, time to eat, time to eat. Amen. Like, time for you to quit talking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sam got embarrassed one time because he thought the service was over and it wasn't, and he stood up to go, and he was the only one. And that was the first time I ever saw him actually get embarrassed. And it broke my heart because I would rather he get mad or something, but don't get embarrassed because that breaks a mama's heart.
I know it does.
He got over it, but I'll never forget that moment where I was like, oh, no, if we could all just leave right now, that'd be great. So some comments have been coming in for you. I'm going to copy and paste them in an email for you, just some positive comments, some affirmations for you. But nothing really, no questions really. I thought with the last few minutes that we have here, today we've been talking with a lot of different presenters about what does the future look like, and would you share just a little bit about where Joel's living now?
Yeah, he's at Safe Haven Farms. It's a farm for adults with autism outside of Middletown, Ohio, and it's only the 7th or 8th farm of its type in the United States. We've modeled it after Bittersweet Farms up near Toledo, which was the very first farm of its type in the United States. We were very fortunate to get in on the ground floor, my husband and I, to help with the planning, helped with the finding and purchasing of the property and everything. And it's a 60-acre, it was a horse farm, so it has a large barn, and a farm and a house that we actually renovated into offices. And then there are four houses, and each house has four people living in it. They're built in kind of a little semicircle cul-de-sac type of a thing. And each farmer has his own bedroom and his own bathroom, and then there's a common area in the middle of the house for meals, a beautiful kitchen and beautiful living room, you know, TV and stuff like that. So everybody has their private space, and then they have the public space for all four of them. So it's very family-oriented. And then we have a big day program center, which we got a wonderful grant from the Hatton Foundation in Cincinnati to get that built. And so we have a learning center with smart board and iPads and computers and that type of thing. We have a sensory room and a big multi-purpose room that we hold dances in once a month.
So there's both boys and girls living there?
Boys and girls,
and
yeah. I think it's pretty much half and half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're just getting a therapeutic horseback riding program off the ground, which will be opened up to people with autism in the community as well. We have alpacas, sheep, goats, chickens, and the farmers help take care of the animals. That's part of their daily work. We have a couple of hoop houses, so they're growing some of their own vegetables and learning how to cook those vegetables, that type of thing.
And they have a staff, a provider?
Yeah, we have a agency, you know, that staffs at 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's separate staff for the day program. And it's funded through Medicaid waivers. You know, the parents have to put down some money for the house itself, but then everything else is funded through Medicaid and SSI, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really been amazing.
It's a very unique,
living situation. It really is, and I think for some of our kids, you know, I would have loved for Joel to have been able to live in the community, get a job at Kroger, you know, something like that. But that wasn't in the cards for Joel, at least at this point of his life. And he loves to be outside, and he loves animals. So he's in an environment that's very healthy for him. He's out and about and walking around and feeding those animals and going on hikes. And it's a wonderful, wonderful environment. So, yeah, it's a great, great place.
Sounds wonderful.
We have a website, safehavenfarms.org. And I don't know, is my website listed anywhere, Nancy? I didn't notice that.
I'm looking on the website right now, and I don't see it very obvious. So why don't you tell the folks what your website address is?
It's KathleenBolduck.com. So just as you see my name on the screen, .com.
Wonderful. And they can go to your website and look for your books there?
Yeah, my books are on there, and I have a blog. I've been blogging about transitioning into adulthood, transitioning, you know, to being out, or our son moving out of the home, and that type of thing. So,
good, very nice. And that's linked to your website as well?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you being here today, Kathy, talking about finding God, because it's not something that you hear enough of. We are all so busy tracking down the right therapist and the right doctors and everything
right
for our child, but we don't maybe often think about our spiritual support. So,
right, right. And it's just huge. I think it can be such a crucial piece of the puzzle. I really believe that.
I do too.
Yeah.
And so thank you for sharing with us today, and we hope to have you back soon.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
You're so welcome. I want to let our listeners know that we'll be back in about 30 minutes